Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
They were both in League Two only 5 years ago, yet Saturday offers Coventry City and Luton Town a place in the Premier League. Is this season's Championship playoff final the ultimate Cinderella story? I'm Mark Chapman. This is the Athletic Football Podcast.
Broken, it was homeless, it was at war, but they refused to go under. They're heading to Wembley.
Joining us for this one, The Athletic's Matt Slater and Richard Sutcliffe, as well as our EFL writer Nancy Frosten, will be with us very shortly too. And it is, isn't it, Richard? It is a fairy tale final. In fact, it was a fairy tale playoffs, given the background of the four clubs.
Absolutely. You know, Sunderland, we know, 3-4 years down in League One. But particularly with AC, you know, Luton Town, I saw them play York City, and they got beat in the conference playoff final at Wembley, I think 2012, 2013. Didn't come into the league for another couple of years, I think 2014. And to get where they've got, through good management as well, it's not thrown money at it. You know, I would imagine, I don't know if Coventry's wage bill would be slightly lower than Luton, but I bet they're one of the few clubs that are lower than Luton's wage bill. So to have these two there, I just think it's fantastic.
It sort of gives everybody hope, doesn't it, Matt? I mean, the number of podcasts we've done on sport business or how to run a football club or investments and so on and so forth. Well, you know, you go back to 2018, both sides were in League Two. You go back to 2014, as Richard says, Luton were in the National League. So for those listening further afield, that's the fifth tier of English football. It gives old romantics a nice warm glow.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think we've had Gary Sweet, Luton Town's chief executive, on the pod. And, you know, he is a testament to, I mean, he came in with a group of local guys who basically rescued the club, and they've done it on a shoestring. They've done it incredibly sensibly. I mean, there's some amazing things at stake here. I mean, if Luton were to go up, they would be the first team to go from the fifth tier to the Premier League. If Coventry do it, I think that they would be the first team to go from the Premier League to League Two and back again. So we're talking about two. This is the snakes and ladders. This is the pyramid. These two teams epitomise the pyramid. And if you have come to English football and you like English football, you think English football's USP is the pyramid, i.e. the jeopardy of promotion and relegation, these two clubs, this game, is it. It is Welcome to Wrexham, it's Ted Lasso, it's all those shows in a game. And these two teams embody what we love about promotion and relegation.
Let's start with Coventry, shall we? Who, and I don't know which one of you wants to start with their sort of ground and ownership issues from dropping all the way out of the Premier League when they were, I mean, God knows what this stadium's called now, but I still mainly refer to as the Rico, isn't it? I mean,
Coventry Building people, Society.
Thank you, right. Yeah. I mean, God, it's gone through all sorts.
Come
right.
on.
So, Rico, all the I have to tell you, I mean, at the start of every season, I spend more time trying to learn what every stadium's called than I do looking at who players and managers are. Anyhow, from dropping out from the Rico all the way down and all the way back with ownership issues, stadium issues, financial issues, tenancy issues, other people owning the stadium. I mean, it has been a melting pot of chaos.
It has, and that includes this season. You know, we talk about the ownership issues there. But the Commonwealth Games was held at the stadium last summer, so they couldn't play for the first three games of the season. I think Huddersfield was one that was postponed, and that meant they were bottom of the league after a month, because I think they played every game away, but there were also a couple of games behind everybody. So to come from that, I went down in October when Sheffield United were there, and they beat Sheffield United. You know, a bit of a nothing game. I got down early, so I went down to Highfield Road just to see, you know, just to have a wander around and see what it's like. And you know, somebody nicked the plaque which was commemorating the opening, which I thought was a bit rich. But you thought, you know, there's no way. I've been to Highfield Road. I'm sure you guys have. And you know, it was a lovely stadium, and this was supposed to be. But moving was supposed to be the thing that changed everything. Mm. You know, that's what they were promised, the supporters. And yet everything that could go wrong has gone wrong. They've been to Northampton for 2 years, been to St Andrews for a year, locked out. Even, you know, I wrote a piece, I think it was sort of November, saying what a good job Mark Robbins is doing. And that was because of everything that was going on in the background, because there was yet another threat just before Christmas that they get locked out completely. Because Mike Ashley had bought the stadium, I was buying the stadium. Another guy was trying to buy the club. We sensed Mike Ashley probably wanted to buy the club, but it didn't happen. And it looked like they were going to have to look somewhere again. So to actually ride all that and take a team from, you know, like you say, from League Two all the way to the, you know, the very tip of the Premier League, it's an incredible story. And, you know, if Mark Robbins gets that over, then I think we're talking statue along with Jimmy Hill.
How, their most famous son. How are they? What is the ownership issue now, Matt?
They got bought by a local businessman whose name escapes me.
Doug King.
Yeah.
This is a
lovely story. It's a lovely story because they really have been through the mill. And as Richard explained, right? So, you know, if Coventry City don't mean much to you because you just haven't, you know, you've come to the football relatively recently. When I was a kid, Coventry City were an absolute staple of the top tier. They didn't do a great deal. I think they had an amazing knack of sort of never. Of just surviving.
Do you want the stat? For 47 years, this has been, I mean, it's funny and not funny in equal measure. For 47 years, between 1971 and 2018, they never finished in the top six of division they were in. So that
Crystal
was
Palace, poetry. You got a long way to go.
Yeah.
So that is my memory of them. And, but they had this reputation for being well run. Coventry is a unfashionable kind of place, and I feel I can say that because my dad went to school there. But the club very much represented the city, and they always felt like a sort of solid club. Then they went down, but around the time they were going down, this new stadium was going to be the key to them remaining in the top tier, and it just went horribly wrong. They ran out of money, and they lost control of their stadium. They actually had to sort of sell bits of it to the council. Some of it was handed to a charity for a while. It all got very, very messy. We then had about sort of, you know, 10 years of just the usual things going wrong with ownerships and trying to sort of reunite stadium and club. They ended up in the hands of a hedge fund who, it was totally unclear to me what they wanted with this team. It was almost certainly around the land, the property. It's an interesting stadium because it was very much built to be multi-use. Casino, hotel, big car park. I think it was an old factory, wasn't it? It was part of was it the Jaguar site or British Leyland or something like that. I think it was an old factory site. And there's a big supermarket there. So it was very much about it was in that sort of a first wave of this is going to be a 365-day business. We need footfall. So a lot of the stuff that we talk about, Mark, on you know, when we talk about the business of football, Coventry was sort of a bit of a petri dish. You know, it was sort of like, but it went wrong. They lost control of the experiment, and then they've struggled, and they've just, you know, wandered through the, you know, the lower divisions ever since. And this hedge fund had it anyway. The hedge fund finally sells after years and years of rowing, where they became this nomadic club, and it's just suddenly started to go right.
Let's bring Nancy in, who so far her only contribution has been Doug King, because yes. because she's been recording, very busy at the moment, aren't you, Nancy? You've got lots of podcasts to record and lots of articles to write. So it wasn't we were ignoring you. You were a little bit late joining us. The drop through the divisions and then the arrival of Mark Robbins, though, led to maybe a clarity that the only way they were going to do anything to get themselves remotely back was young players, was bring through their own. And they've been incredibly successful, actually, despite all of this turmoil, in developing young talented players.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely been players that they've developed themselves or ones that they've signed where, you know, I think they paid maybe £1 million, could have been more, for Victor Gyökeres, and he didn't blow anyone's socks off in a loan at Swansea. you know, I don't think that Coventry fans kind of thought that he would become this, which is, you know, their most saleable asset. And if they don't go up, I do wonder if this might be the summer he goes. And, you know, we're probably talking over 10 million at least, I would think, given the way he plays and what he adds to a team. But, you know, he's not alone. You've got Gustavo Hamer, Callum O'Hare, who they signed. He'd been in Villa's academy, but, you know, a player they gave a chance. Loads of players like that, you know, you could keep going. But in a similar way to Luton, they've had to be smart with their business. And you know, they haven't been able to spend loads and loads of cash on the done deal. Or, you know, it's been Mark Robbins being brilliant at what he does, not been shouted about enough, in my opinion, in terms of what he's done. And he picks up all these players, either develops them or gives them a new home in his style of play and his system. And, you know, they've been brilliant. And arguably kind of because of what Matt talked about and them playing in Northampton and playing in Birmingham away from home, probably have had a much less settled decade than Luton. So they're similar clubs in a lot of ways in kind of the where they've come from. But how they've had to do it, I think, is actually quite different.
You say he's not been shouted about enough. I'm not really sure he's been shouted about at all, Richard, has he? I mean, I see jobs come up, and Coventry fans, this is not touting your manager to someone else. It's just a really interesting way of how these things work. You know, the Leicester job comes up, for example. People immediately go, oh, Michael Carrick. Well, hang on, Michael Carrick's only... I know he's done a brilliant job at Middlesbrough, but he's been there for 8 months. I mean, the back catalogue of work that Mark Robbins has is tenfold to what my, and I'm not picking on Carrick there, Richard, but...
Absolutely. Before coming to the FA, I worked at the Yorkshire Post. So I've dealt with Mark a lot when he was, particularly at Huddersfield and at Rotherham. And I think Rotherham has been a pretty good grounding for him in terms of Coventry, because Rotherham had to leave the stadium when he was manager. They had to go to the Don Valley Stadium because they couldn't afford the rent at Millmore. So they just had to get out, with the promise then that they'd rebuild the New York Stadium. But that's 4 years down the line. And yet he got them there, he sorted the team out, and they were in really good shape. He got tempted away to Barnsley in the end, but he'd done such a good job there in such difficult circumstances that's probably something he could lean back on for his playbook. But I totally agree with you. You know, you mentioned Carrick there, but there's Vincent Kompany, who's obviously done an absolutely brilliant job, turned around a club that I worried about them when they came down, just, you know, with the financial aspect and the repayments they had to make. You know, they need to bounce straight back, which obviously what they've done. But I know he's a huge name because, you know, he was at City in the Premier League age. But, you know, Mark Robbins played at the, you know, biggest club in the country. You know, and obviously he's credited with saving Ferguson's job way back. So I don't understand why he's not mentioned. I agree with you. I don't know why he's not mentioned. You know, Leeds United, all right, they might not want to appoint an ex-Manchester United man. But, you know, they're coming down into the Championship and all these names are getting mentioned. Like you said, Brendan Rodgers. You know, could they tempt Graham Potter to come down to the Championship? Matt Robbins, you know, it's, whether he wants to go, I doubt it, because he's built such a big thing there. Even if they don't go up this year, you know, he's built so much in adversity, I would imagine it'd be quite hard to step away. But, yeah, I think he's been fantastic. Brilliant job.
So sometimes it's in this football world that we live in, Nancy, it's people look at image over anything else, don't they? I mean, you know, look, he's very down to earth. He doesn't get carried away, does he? I mean, he's learnt at the school of Ferguson, maybe because he hasn't got, you know, a nice button down shirt under a blazer and a pair of black trainers with white soles. He isn't getting looked at.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's not speaking badly of any of his former clubs to say they're not exactly fashionable clubs in terms of. He didn't sort of go straight into, you know, Coventry are probably the biggest club, if I'm thinking back properly through his career, hopefully, and getting all the clubs right in my mind. But, you know, Coventry are probably the biggest club he's been at, and he's built his way up to that. But, yeah, the likes of Rotherham, Barnsley, Huddersfield, you know, they're not the type of club that maybe gets loads of attention unless they're in a playoff final, or, you know, unless they're in a good FA Cup run or something like that. So actually, yeah, to have built what he has... I'm sort of on the same page as Sutty there. I'm not sure if someone like Leeds came for him that he would necessarily go, because I think he's got pretty much everything there now, especially under a new owner and kind of the new lease agreement with the stadium to go again next season and you know, be in a really healthy position. So, but yeah, I quite fancy them in the final. So,
do you? What kind of football do they play then? For people who haven't seen Coventry, what are they like?
Exciting, counter-attacking, And it will be an interesting game because I think Coventry are quite used to not having a lot of the ball. But then when they do win it, they're on you. They're straight up the pitch. Jokeres is a nightmare because, you know, he'll score the goals, but he's also such a good link-up player. He'll hold up the ball. He can run at you. He's got the full package. And I do wonder if Brighton will have wished that they held on to him a bit longer. But yeah, they'll want to counter-attack. They'll move the ball quickly. And whenever I've seen them play, it's been exhilarating. So I feel like when we get to the last, if it's tight, and I think it will be tight, and you get into that last 10, 15 minutes where it's all nerves and all kind of everyone doing that mad dashing end-to-end stuff, which is what I love about most of the EFL a lot of the time. I think that'll just suit Coventry. And they've got some, you know, big players, big defensive players, which matching up to some of the aerial threat of Luton might suit them a bit more. So I think it'll be close, but I do wonder if the chaos is kind of more suited to them.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Team of the season may well have scored Luton Town's most important goal of the season.
On to Luton, Matt. Take us through. They were actually Premier League founder members, but got relegated the season it started. So, and then all the way out of the Football League and now back. What's been there? Off-field situation, and what is it now? Yeah,
what's the story? So yeah, they got to go to all the meetings, and then the Premier League starts. Yeah, sorry guys, but again, you know, that's promotion relegation. I mean, I just think there are so many parallels between these clubs. So you know, I'm looking at their numbers, and you know, the revenue, wages, all really really similar, all below Championship averages, by the way. So that again shows how they both punch above their weight, but. You know, Luton, when they went down, I guess you could say they were going to more like their natural level. They didn't have that length of tenure that Coventry had. There's another parallel in that their best year is 1987 for both clubs. Luton came seventh in the Division One that year and they won the League Cup. They beat Arsenal. Yeah. Coventry City beat Spurs in the FA Cup. 1987. That's not that long ago. I know I'm an old man.
Well, it is, Matt. It is. In my head, I don't think it
but
is.
I remember
and then
I actually
count backwards, and it's nearly 40 years ago.
I know. All right. All right.
I wasn't born, but
87.
Thanks very much, Nancy. I was waiting for that.
Don't do that.
Anyway. But interestingly, Matt, when Coventry got through against Middlesbrough, and I was doing the radio, and I said, you know, oh, so we now have the playoff final, Luton Coventry. I did say it's like going back to 1987 because that year sticks in my mind for both of those clubs.
All right, well, I'm going to change all that and scrap that bit. I'm going to say 2018, of course, or 2017, whenever it was, when they were coming out of League Two. There's your parallel.
Not that long ago.
Yeah, exactly. Because I'm a very young man. How would I know what happened in 87? But so Luton, right, down starts to sort of bounce around. Their real problems started in about 2007, which isn't that long ago, and they have the, I suppose, the unfortunate record. I think it's three straight relegations. Not many have done that. They went second tier to fifth tier at a rate of knots, and that last relegation was in complete disarray on and off the pitch. They were docked 30 points for breaking all kinds of rules, financial rules, but very specifically around kind of dealing with agents. So they kind of went down in an element of shame as well. And that was real rock bottom. And Luton have always had this issue with their ground, which, of course, has sort of dominated the social media commentary around Luton. They've been trying to move out of that ground, Kenilworth Road, for years, decades, longer than Southend. And that's a long time. So this has been a problem for them. Now, look, they have got a site. They've got a clear plan. They've already done the training ground. It's going to get done. And I genuinely believe it of this group, this club now, that they are going to achieve this goal, and being promoted will definitely help. But this has been, again, one of the sort of spectres. This, again, this issue of a ground. You have an old dilapidated ground. What do you do? I could think of sort of, two dozen clubs that this story would apply to. But so Luton really, really lost their way 15 years ago. And ever since then, it has, I think, a wonderful story. I think they've got, they've got another nice little record that they've finished a place higher every season for sort of 7 or 8 years. So they got promoted out of the conference, I think, as champions. And then it was back-to-back promotions, League Two, League One, and then sort of, stability in the championship. They made the playoffs last year. So it's just this great story of progress, incremental progress, where you make good decision after good decision.
I mean, just a final one on the ground, Richard, because you talk to a lot of people, and everybody seems to, well, they're neutral on who wins between Luton and Coventry. There are quite a lot of people who would like Luton to go up simply to watch Chelsea, Arsenal, Liverpool, Manchester City having to deal with Kenilworth Road next season, which is going to need £10 million worth of work on it just to get it up to Premier League standard.
Yeah, it is. It reminds me a little bit when I used to cover Bradford back when they got into the Premier League. And I did a piece, I think it was either Lee Sharp or Gary Walsh, I can't remember, but they used to have one toilet in the between the two teams, to use between the two dressing rooms. And they said to the club, don't change that because this is going to be a great... Plus, we'll have, trying to think of the players, there's obviously Hasselbank and all this sort of ilk coming to Valley Parade. And they saw that as a great thing. And their home form did end up keeping them up that first year. Whether it was because they only had one toilet to share, I don't know, between 20-odd players. But it's interesting with Kenilworth Road, and people, I know people have been a bit sniffy about it, and, you go over the gardens to get into the away end. But I think people have got matches, they'll actually love that. The players might not. Again, mentioning Valley Parade, as recently as when Arsenal came there in the League Cup and they got knocked out by Phil Parkinson's team, Arsene Wenger had Arsenal changing on the bus because the dressing room was too small, which maybe will play on people's minds. But this year has been great to me because it's not their home form that's got them where they are. I think their home form, something like 9th or 10th in the division, it's how good they are away from home. I saw Bramall Lane, they won 1-0 there, and also Sheffield United finished second. And they're really, really good on the road. I think it's like the second or third best record. So, like Nancy, I think it's going to be tight. But, people will say, oh, yeah, it's the wide open spaces of Wembley. I don't think it'll suit Luton. And they are physical. I can see them sneaking it. It's going to be a 1-0 job, I think. But I can see them doing it.
And they've done all of this season, Nancy. Let's not forget, with a change of manager that was through no fault of their own. I mean, they lost, Southampton came calling for Nathan Jones. So they've actually had no disruption from their manager going somewhere else.
Yeah, and this is the remarkable thing. It's, again, maybe that thing of some of the talk about Kenilworth Road sort of feeds into that. I don't know if it's easy to look down on Luton and not take them seriously as this club that have consistently made right decisions. Yeah. If they had a black box like Southampton did 5-10 years ago and everyone was talking about it and or something like that, they've probably got a version of that. But they lost Nathan Jones once and got promoted without him out of League One. So to lose him again, I think it probably hurt a lot more that first time when he went to Stoke. So to lose him again, I think they knew they could survive that, basically. And not just survive that, but they've made a brilliant appointment in probably quite a sore one for Watford fans to see Rob Edwards go in, sort of take over. He's tweaked a few bits, but it's a fairly similar sort of setup and style of play to kind of what was going on under Nathan Jones. But what he's added to them, you know, I think...
So has Rob Edwards changed anything?
I think there's a little bit more... It's not massive changes. It's not sort of... Because they didn't need it. They were already going well. But I think they get the ball down a bit more and it's slightly less kind of sort of aerial threat, route one type stuff. But, you know, a lot of it, I think, as well is environment and mentality and culture, which was there regardless of whoever was going to be manager. So, you know, they've picked a very good, young, forward-thinking coach who I think will actually probably be better prepared to take them on to the Premier League if he does then want to make more changes to kind of the style of stuff that he was playing at Forest Green, for example. So, yeah, it was just an inspired choice. And I guess to take someone who's just recently been at your kind of biggest rivals and not feel that that's a terrible decision or something that's just impossible to look at, because Luton fans probably won't care if they go up now, although they're not going to think, oh, he's an ex-Watford.
Well, it makes him even more of a hero, doesn't it, to
yeah.
Luton fans? In the you know, he's left Watford, well, sacked by Watford, and he now comes to Luton and takes them up. I kind of think probably in Luton fans' eyes, Richard, makes him more of a hero.
Absolutely, because you can always turn around to your biggest rivals and say, look what you could have won. You know,
yeah.
Find his bullseye style, because, you know, if they'd have stuck with him, could he have done this, you know, with obviously more talented players? You know, you look at that Watford squad, it's a fantastic squad. But if he'd have been given some time, maybe Watford would be looking forward to a playoff final, but they're not.
Where are we at with this game financially, Matt? What figure are we making up now to say that it's worth?
Well, the industry shorthand is to say 200 million.
200 million now? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's about that. I mean, if we wanted to sort of try and analyse, because it'd be worth different things to different clubs, of course. So
go on. Explain that.
Well, just because, you know, bigger gates, right? Bigger away following. Okay. So Luton are going to sell out.
Yeah.
Right? They've only got 10,000 seats. Now, I don't think they're going to, you know, whack up the prices either. It's not really the ownership style. You know, Coventry have got a bit more room. But, of course, they don't own the ground. Sorry, that was another complication there.
Yes.
So Mike Ashley's going to do all right again. But and then, of course, commercial as well. So, you know, you go up to the Premier League and you get, you know, more for your shirt sponsor. So it varies. But the bit that doesn't vary and the bit that often everyone focuses on is the difference in TV revenue. So on that, it's pretty simple, right? You go up. And even if you're dreadful next year and come 20th, you are definitely getting the basic central award that every Premier League club gets, which is, you know, 80, 90 million-ish. And then you definitely get 2 years of parachute payments, which gets you to about, I think it's about 170 million. So sort of 44 million year one, 36 million year two. So if you go sort of 90 million plus 80 million, it's about 170 million. Now, if you can stay up a year, so you get another year of Premier League money. You then also get, and then go down, you get a third year, you get a year three parachute payment. And that can get you to 290 million. So that's where some, you know, things start to get really exciting. So the idea that it's this the most expensive, the most lucrative single game is a nice tagline, because in theory it sort of is. You know, if you win this game, you can even sort of just be dreadful. You can take next year off. And your revenue over the next 3 years is best part of 200 million better off. But of course, no one does it like that, because first thing you've got to do is you've got to fix your floodlights and, you know, take out all your hospitality suites, because you've got to put more TV people in there. So it's not a, oi, 200 million pours in. It does, but it immediately sort of goes out the other door.
I wonder who ends up being on TV more will be quite interesting if they get promoted. Because I would argue as well, Nancy, that the ground then comes into that as well. I sort of look at this season. I've got no stats in front of me, so I'm just going on really what I've seen. I think I would suggest, and I know they've got a big history, Nottingham Forest, but Nottingham Forest as a promoted club have probably been on telly more than Bournemouth, I would have said this season, and probably I would have thought more than Fulham. And I wonder whether atmosphere, ground, atmospherics are all part of that. And therefore, given what Matt said about the relative grounds, actually Luton's ground could be an advantage in how much they get on telly, because the cameras will want to be there for when all the big boys turn up.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, with Forest as well, you've got that not novelty, but because they were away for so long, and what it's done for the city recently, and all the tifos and all those, you know, amazing displays they did on the way to winning the playoffs last year. That's had its appeal in its own way. And then, yeah, Kenilworth Road's got a magic about it. And I wrote an article that prompted a lot of debate in the comments about kind of, you know, why I think Kenilworth Road's brilliant. And if you're an away fan, there are probably a lot of things to hate about it. And, you know, I think
there are a lot of things to love about it if you're an away fan as well.
Yeah, there are more things to love than hate about it, because these are the grounds that are disappearing at a rate of knots. And, yeah, you know, when Luton do finally get the move to Power Court, it'll be brilliant for them. And like Matt said, it's the thing they've been pushing for decades. But also, if I was a season ticket holder, I'd be taking a little bit of that, you know, main stand or whatever with me. Because it's still got the wooden benches and the players are going into the changing rooms under a tunnel, under a road. And yeah, the away end is that magical sort of between terraced houses entrance and everything. And that will attract the TV cameras, because yes, their home form this season hasn't been as good as their away form, which is unusual for Luton. But if you've ever been there, that 10,000 feels like 30,000, because it's so close to the pitch. And especially on a night game, it's so intense. And, you know, they will cheer a player tracking back to make a big tackle as much as they will someone, you know, scoring a goal or creating a chance or something. And it's a level of intensity that I think comes from the kind of adversity that they've been through, because there are certain qualities in their players that I think matter more to them than maybe at other clubs where it's been a bit more straightforward for them to reach the Premier League. So yeah, it is a magical ground, and I think it will attract a lot of attention.
And given both clubs have finally had so many off-field issues, particularly stadiums and so on, as we've been saying, Richard, even if they go up and come straight back down, the money they are going to get could and should help the structure of the clubs going forward. Doesn't mean that they'll come straight back up, does it, if they come straight back down? Because we see lots of sides who've been relegated then get mired in the Championship and not return. But it should help both of them, whichever one goes up, off the field.
In theory, yes. And obviously we all get excited about the numbers that come in from this game. I also remember speaking to Paul Duffin when Hull went up the first time in 2008 under Phil Brown, and he was the chairman. And I was talking about it sort of a year after, and it all started to go wrong because they'd spent too much money and things like that. And he basically said, I think back then it was a £60 million final. That's how much you got for it rather than 200. But he says that £60 million, the clubs are just like a valve, or just like a pipe, really, where you pour it in at one end and it doesn't even touch the sides of the club, and it pops out the other end with agents and players. And, you know, Sheffield United, you know, they were up for 2 years, came down. They had nothing whatsoever to show for being up there in terms of infrastructure. All right, they spent the £5 million initially on getting the floodlights right and the media area and things like that. But the rest of it just went on players and transfer fees. Huddersfield, exactly the same. Burnley were probably the exception that they had all that money in the bank before Pace bought them, obviously, and then it was done as a leverage deal. But it's rare, you know, all these clubs think, oh, we'll be all right for 5 years now because we're going to bank £180 million or £220 million or whatever. But the clubs just don't see that. You know, the training grounds don't get done. The grounds don't get done up. And all that happens is your ex-players are very, very rich people.
Slightly, unfortunately, depressing way to end the podcast. But
sorry about that.
I know, we've been so cheerful before that.
I'm a Yorkshireman.
I know, yeah, goodness me. Fine line between realism and just misery. So you're going Luton, are you, Richard? Nancy, you're going Coventry.
Yeah, close.
You could have the deciding vote if you want, Matt. But given your dad's links, I'm guessing you're going Coventry, are you?
I don't know, but my father-in-law is a Luton man.
Crikey.
Yeah, I'm going to go Luton.
Oh, yeah. Right, yeah. There we go. Thank you very much to all three of you. Enjoy the playoff finals over the weekend. They're a very special few days of football. For more from The Athletic, just subscribe for £1.99 a month for the first 12 months. Head to theathletic.com/footballpod.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.